Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, joined by David McDonald. It is Monday, the 22nd of January, 2024. This is episode 294, and we're having a better week than Rafe and Curtis over at the Okada Shorts podcast, who say, what the hell should we do with our branding?
That's a good point. Yeah, they're fucked, aren't they? Can I suggest the PuroCast? That's available.
Suji Smile, that's a good one.
Yeah, yes, that's actually pretty nice. I like that. Yeah, I guess they're going to have some conversations, aren't they? Over there at the Shorts.
It's a sign. Shut it down. No more podcasts for you. Pack it in.
Yep, you're done. I mean, that's a sign, right? Isn't it? I mean, I would take that as a sign and be like, well, it was a good run, kids. Let's pack it up.
Was it? It was a run.
Aw, come on. They're definitely fifth. Sorry, they're definitely fifth, that. Right? They're top five, right? Hey, come on. They're definitely in the top five. I'm kidding, of course. Everyone's great. Everyone's a distant second. It's okay. Look, what a week. What a wacky fucking week. And I'll go so far as to say, not to toot our own horn again, because we did a lot of that. That annoyed a lot.
Definitely toot our own horn again. Let's do that. Let's do another hour of that.
Okay. Toot. Another podcast. I mean, we're just fucking cranking out the content here. Whew, you would think you were paying for this shit. God damn.
Speaking of which, redcircle.com/shows/super-j-cast. May we humbly recommend $5 a month? Seems about fair for the brilliant stuff we give you every week.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, aside from this, that fucking Discord, man. I mean, the people, whoever owns Discord, if Discord LLC, they got to be looking at us like, what the fuck are they doing? Jesus Christ. The bandwidth you're using. Yeah, a lot of discussion, a lot of healthy discussion. Plenty of unhealthy discussion. Don't get me wrong. It is our Discord. But yeah, I mean, what a week. What a fucking crazy week. And the thing about it is, you know, we do our show and then it feels like we get reactionary text messages to our shows to kind of clear up information and to maybe add a lot more information and a lot more perspective and a lot more insight as to why things may have occurred the way that we believe they have occurred. And needless to say, it was just another fucking just, you're just reading texts and your eyes are open and you're just shaking your head back and forth. Like, what fucking planet are we living on? Like, what happened?
Right. And a text that made us think, are we going to need to record again? Do we need to do an emergency addendum to the emergency podcast?
those texts have gone back more than once to, over and above the emergency podcast that we did. So, well, look, we're going to get into it, right? We're consider this like round three of the Ocala is his name, Okada saga. It's crazy. So again, if you were in our Discord, you already know a lot of this, but we'll add a little spice and we'll add a little bit more flavor and we'll give you a little bit more of
you're a victim of the psyop.
Yeah, right. And if you're not, then again, some of this might be news, some of this might be stuff that's interesting, some of this stuff might be you might hand wave it, who knows. But what a week.
You were mentioning off here about noodles. I had a delicious noodle dinner. Mm. Mally cooked tantan ramen for us, which is one of my favorite dishes, which I don't know if you've had it. It's like it's a sort of Japanese take on the Sichuan Chinese dish of dandan noodles, which is basically noodles with a spicy minced pork, and the broth is flavored with like sesame.
Mm.
It's like a creamy sesame broth with spicy minced pork. It's delicious.
It does sound good. People driving in their car and on the subway and, you know, just if their earbuds in screaming, what the fuck are you talking about? Noodles, man? Yeah, we're going to open with noodles. I made noodles this weekend as well. The very thick cut fresh noodles, right? So we have this gigantic Asian grocery store that's near us that like not only Japanese and Taiwanese and you name it. I mean, it there's sections for across. I mean, India is represented and it goes on and on, right? It's massive. So we went there and we just kind of bought stuff based off of recipes that we saw online and via the YouTube. And so I made this noodles and it was a chili garlic. So I had ginger, garlic, shallots, and the noodles, of course. And then I forget the name of the chili powder, but it was like, I want to say gunum or it was like googlum.
Gochujang?
What was it?
No, not gochujang. That's the sauce. Gochugaru?
I think that's it. Yes. Yes. So that was a main component, and it was and pork, like ground pork. Fantastic. Fucking, I nailed it. Had the oyster sauce. I had the fucking.
Is there a particular YouTube channel you're following for this stuff?
Yeah, it's a white guy. You're going to hate it. It's a white guy making Asian dishes. But, you know, he's fine. You know what I like? Because he gets to the point. Like, I fucking hate when it's 9 hours of the history of the fucking recipe, and I just give me the fucking recipe. So I'll send you the link. You tell me how authentic it is. How about that? You would be, have a better and a wider palate, and B, you lived there, so you would know. And you're fantastic, Mrs. What a chef she sounds like. Oh, what a joy. What a fantastic joy. And the mother of your children. Look at you. You are a lucky man. You are a fucking lucky man. And
I know, right?
She sings karaoke. Boy, yeah. Oh, did she sing. I was going through, you know how you just kind of go through your phone and you get your memories. A little memory came up. And one of them was of her, what was it? What was the song she was singing? Lucky Boy or? Oh, it was so good. She was just pipes like an angel. Just sings like an angel.
I'm just going to bite my tongue here.
What are you saying? What? You don't agree with me that she doesn't have a heavenly singing voice, Joe? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I always wonder if, not that there'd be any reason for them to do it, but if my kids were to ever go back and listen to any of this, I'm not sure I'd want them hearing me slander their mother's singing voice.
That's a good point.
Well, I've implied that now, so I may as well go ahead and say that. It fucking sucks.
It's fucking horrible. It's like fucking cats in a blender. I you know what? I do wonder that too. Like if, like, I know we've said this a trillion times, but during the COVID lockdowns and everything that went on, just like the history that it is. Not even just from a wrestling perspective, but, you know, this is dad calling people assholes over the internet. I wonder
if we put out enough content for some sort of AI to successfully and authentically replicate us.
Oh, my God. Imagine that. You know what it would be? I know what I saw accidentally. I didn't mean to see it, but I saw it, and it pissed me off for a good 15 minutes. But then I was like, I got a point. Somebody said I have a, what do they call it? Laugh apnea, where I kind of giggle, and I guess that's what they might mean. Like I kind of just giggle at the end of things sporadically, like I do right now. And I was like, what the fuck that mean, man? I was like, yeah, you're probably right. You see, and the words unlistenable. Listenable.
No, they've got a point there.
Right. And then another one I saw, Joel, I don't want to, I hate when people do it to me, but unfortunately I'm going to do this to you. They called the great Joel A. Arrogant. Arrogant.
Me?
Yes.
How dare they?
I know. I was like, of all people, you're not arrogant. And if you're going to think that over somebody who does a fucking wrestling podcast, for Christ's sake, my God, what a maniac you might be. Lock you
I've,
up.
I've got no time for the sort of false humility. Like, oh, we're the best.
We are. It's very, very clear. I don't understand why it's just not universally accepted. I had a dream that we did a show with Dave. Big Dave came on the show. And we were talking about Okada, and he like broke some like crazy news. I don't even remember what it was, but I remember us being like, that can't possibly be true. It was like, yes, he took a job and he is now in construction. Right. And we're like, what? Yep. He is. He's in the labor trades, you know, and it's Dave, you know, talking like Dave does in his fucking rambly fast, you know, shuffling paper mode. Yeah, I had a dream that, and Okada went into construction, building houses, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah,
there you go. Oh, I found the text, the thing you're talking about. Honestly, a pretty good podcast that is also unlistenable. I think that might be the fairest and most accurate and best review we've ever gotten, to be honest.
No, look on YouTube. Look on the last show on YouTube, because that's where I saw it, because I was farting around on YouTube, and it came up as a suggestion. Like it always is, because I do listen a lot to our show because I'm funny and you are too, on YouTube. And that's where the comment was. So the last show, if you want to find it, it's
the emergent. Oh, five comments. Wow. It's kicking off here.
Yeah. 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 Not good, right?
Here we go. Yeah. This is
you got it?
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, look, we try. We try to say goodbye, but we choke. You know who that is?
Yeah, Macy Gray.
That is correct. Good job by you. Joel with the fucking walk-off home run right there. Woo!
It's not arrogance, it's brilliance.
Yeah. I love her voice. People say they don't like her voice. You know, those are probably the same people that say I have laugh apnea. Who say that?
Yeah, she's got like a nice sort of croaky, husky voice.
Yeah, like raspy and yeah, it's unique. I love a unique voice. Like I'm not a big fan of I have the pipes and I will hit every note on my way up and down. But I hate that. I like I like a unique voice. Thus, I don't know. I just prefer unique voices. Thus, like Suede and Morrissey and even Liam and those boys. But I like a unique. And she's got one. She's got a very and good voice. And dare I say, there is something incredibly sexy about her. And I don't know if it's just she's just batshit nuts that I like. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but there is something sexy about her, and I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I agree.
There you go. I guess Manly just walked
in. I've not thought about Macy Gray for about 20 years.
Well, I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
Wait, no, longer than that. When was that song? 1999.
Yeah. That's good. I like that one. What other one did she do that I really like? Oh, I forget. It'll come to me.
I try Beauty of the World, Sweet Baby.
Sweet Baby, yeah. I like Sweet Baby. Sweet Baby. Love her. So good.
Can we get Macy Gray on the show?
Can we get Macy Gray on the show? We'll get Dave and Macy Gray on the show.
Round table. Nobody asked for.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fucking awesome. Well, listen, 15 minutes in, and we still haven't talked about the meat and the potatoes. You want to get into the meat and potatoes?
Yeah. Well, all right. Let's go back to the big man, Okada. Yeah. I have
eight.
Two.
What?
God, don't. That's awful. I have, one extended thought on one sort of addendum on the Okada situation. When I say extended thought, this is going to be a long one. So everybody just sit down because, strap in. So we've been speaking to people, as we always do, from many different perspectives. And let me preface this with a few caveats. Firstly, it is not uncommon for people to privately badmouth outgoing talent to us. Like, you know how it is. Like, well, seeing as they're gone, actually, they were a bit of a twat. So keep that in mind. Second caveat is that there's a very strong possibility, if not probability, that stuff gets strategically leaked to us, knowing that we're going to run with it, possibly influence the fan discourse within our tiny bubble of the fandom, at least. So, perhaps that's me overestimating the tiny slice of clout we have, but I have to consider that as a possibility because it's happened before, usually a lot more clumsily and obviously, but it's happened all the same. So take what I'm about to say with those two heavy pinches of salt in mind. So hear me out. And if you, dear listener, think I'm either completely nuts or a deluded New Japan shill or I'm being worked, then fair enough. Right? I'm not going to fight you on it. I'm going to weave this fine tapestry and hang it up, and people can react to it however they feel.
Great. So, love it. Yes.
We were told something about Okada that was quite shocking, quite surprising. And I took that to another source who more or less said that it tracks with their understanding of things. They were slightly more generous, but the core facet of the story remains. So we were told two things about Okada. One, that he repeatedly told the office that he was staying. Now, that's on the office to a large extent, because at the end of the day, if he's not put pen to paper, then you got to prepare for the worst. So file that one away. The second and more, I think, explosive element was that Okada, and I quote, refuses to work with young talent. Right? So if you take that at face value, and I'm not saying that you should, right? But let's explore that possibility, because I did, and I found that it explains an awful lot of things that we were really scratching our heads over last year. So questions like, well, most obviously, what happened to the Okada versus the youth program? Why was there no payoff to the Kaito feud? Why wasn't he in the G1A block, which would have made much more sense than Sanada, which would have set up months and years of future feuds? Why is he fucking around with the six-man titles? Why hasn't he been used to put over the younger guys? Why is he only having singles matches against established names like Danielson and Ospreay and Tanahashi? Why is there no sign of a pass on the torch moment as he leaves the company? So I put it to you that 36-year-old Kazuchika Okada saw the writing on the wall, as you would say, realised that he peaked in terms of G1 wins and world title wins and Wrestle Kingdom main event wins, and understood that his future value to the company was establishing the next generation, and thought, to a large extent, fuck that noise.
Yep.
So Is it a stretch to imagine Okada being at that Muto retirement show at the Tokyo Dome back in February and seeing all that hullabaloo, all that money lining Muto-san's pockets and thinking, you know what, maybe he's not wrong. I've got a wife and a kid. My body hurts every day. I'm not getting any younger. I don't fancy breaking my back for crap money to set up a bunch of guys who are going to take my spot. Some who don't even work for this company. So maybe he looked at Muto-san and thought, this is a guy who's taking care of himself and protected his image and been very selective about who he works with and whom he puts over. He's got financial security in buckets. Maybe this is the smartest guy in the room. So that's a bit of conjecture from me. You know, give me a bit of creative freedom here. So I look back to those Kaito Kiyomiya interactions because I think they're really important. They may well have been the turning point here. And I'm sure like the broad strokes of that infamous tag match brawl, the kick to the face, were planned by and large. But I do now retrospectively wonder about that kick to the face and everything that followed, knowing what we know. So is it a kick that might be right up there with Akira Maeda in terms of kicks that changed the course of pro wrestling, the spark that lit this fuse? Probably not. It's a fun thought, if you forgive me, exploring that possibility. So then he's told he's working a singles match with Kaito at the Dome. And like I said, all this for a kid who doesn't even work for New Japan. So like, do we think that Gedo and the Noah office are telling him to go up there, okay, you're going to have a 15-minute extended squash match with no future payoff?
Right.
Is it a stretch to imagine a scenario where Okada's saying, okay, fine, I'll wrestle this kid who's just booted me in the face, but
get
for 50 minutes, I'm barely going to sell for him. I'm completely punking him out. So, you know, maybe Okada didn't much care for Obari's vision of cross-promotional collaboration and found himself wondering, you know, rightly or wrongly, why he was going through all of this to elevate another company's talent, which is a fair question. In hindsight, quite possibly a very daft, maybe even catastrophic thing to ask Okada to do. And it certainly explained why he reportedly hated Obari so much. So we move on. His next singles match is putting over Sleepy Sanada for the world title. His next singles match, he's been lying down for Brian Danielson at Forbidden Door. So again, is it outrageous to think at that point, he's like, oh, fuck this, and taking matters into his own hands, telling the office, look, my contract is up next January. I don't like this shit. We're going to do things my way or I walk. And that brings us nicely onto the G1, where we have that A block with Kaito and Tsuji and Shota Umino, Ren and Gabe and Hikaleo. That would have made way more sense with Okada in there instead of Sanada. And in fact, most people actually predicted that block with Okada in it before it was even announced.
Right.
I have heard whispers from multiple sources that they pitched that block to Okada, a block that presumably would have led to multiple star-making feuds for years to come. And he said, that doesn't work for me, bro. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And post G1 for the rest of 2023, no more singles matches for Okada. He's put on ice for the rest of the year with a six-man belt. So, and do know who's getting the run from that. Who are his teammates for this great six-man run? And it has been a great run. Young up-and-comers Tanahashi and Ishii. Mm-hmm. You know, might have been nice to bring one of the kids on that ride instead of a team with a combined age of 131. But there you go. So my question is this. Has Kazuchika Okada shown any willingness to help get over any of the new generation? Like, can you point to a single memorable example where he's selflessly worked to make Shota or Ren or Yuya or Tsuji look good? Because, like, they've stepped to him, sure, but has he given them anything? Like, he's barely even wrestled anything aside from a few tag matches. And there's a nice little quote from his Tokyo Sport interview yesterday, which, you know, there are various different translations out there, but he says, I can tell you one thing about the future of New Japan. It's not a chance. It's a crisis. The next generation can't just think, oh, this is our chance. They have to step up and save the company, which makes you think, right? And Yuya, I think, is a particularly interesting person to look at. Right, Yota Tsuji, his excursion send-off match is a singles match with Naito. And usually that stuff with New Japan, very, very intentional, very carefully crafted. So as soon as Tsuji returns, he's immediately recoupled with Naito. He's put to LIJ, presumably to set up some rich long-term storytelling there. Yuya Uemura got his send-off singles match with Okada. And I spent plenty of time on this podcast speculating on the significance of that. Since he's returned, there have been two interactions between Okada and Yuya Uemura, an eight-man tag and a six-man untelevised tag, and Okada's been on the winning side in both. Now, I admit, right, this part of it, I'm going full tinfoil hat, but just the weird of the Yuya Just Five guys landing and the lack of one of these young guys being in chaos does make me ask big questions about that, because I don't think that was the original plan. And I think I know why, and I don't think it's because of Yuya. So, I don't think the original plans from the booking committee were to have Okada completely avoid these guys with his contract running down and the very real possibility of him leaving. So we look at this final singles run that Okada's having now with Danielson at Wrestle Kingdom, Ospreay at Battle in the Valley, Tanahashi in Osaka. And I think that tells you a lot, right? I'm betting that Okada had plenty of say in that, if not outright dictating it. And who are the last guys that Okada's put over? Danielson, Forbidden Door, Ospreay in the G1, and Naito in the G1 final. And I would be very surprised if he's laid down for anyone else in these final few matches. And like the Tanahashi match, that makes narrative sense considering their history and, you know, the Rainmaker shot roughly the same time of the year. But don't let that distract you on something I talked about last time we recorded. The real story here, what is that match replacing? And it's the Never Six-Man title match where Kosei Fujita probably getting his big moment, which has quietly been bumped to Korakuen Hall. Do we think that's a coincidence? Do we think the office wanted that? Bearing in mind, the Osaka show sold out ages ago, and what this Okada Tanahashi match is like the fifth match on the card, and probably going to lead into some big angle. I think Andrew on our Discord said, you know, there'll probably be like a House of Torture beatdown, and that will be one of the final matches. Or maybe, if reports are to be believed, and again, this is something that has been told to us, Okada didn't want to give Fujita his moment in Osaka. And look, don't hold your breath for Okada to be eating the losing fall of that six-man either. So we got two matches as yet unannounced for Sapporo. And if one of those matches is like Okada staring at the lights for, I don't know, Shota Umino, then I'll take that as everything I've just said being pure fantasy or a change of heart at least. But my money is on that final match being a big emotional love in with all his chaos buddies. Make no mistake. You know, Okada, Tanahashi, Ishii against, I don't know, Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yano. Right? That's my shot. That's what I'm calling now. Wouldn't even shock me if that ends up actually being the next guys to get the Never Six-Man titles if he can politic his way out of losing to Fujita and his TMDK team. So, last thing here as well. Notice no big press conference about his departure, as you might expect for a departure of this significance. Now, again, as we have been told, it was discussed. It was discussed, but apparently Mr. Chairman said, fuck that. He's leaving. Fuck him. Yeah. So, again, make no mistake. The company, I feel, are holding their noses and playing nice until he's gone. But there's some very real resentment here. And again, this is not me absolving the office entirely of blame. There's plenty of fuck-ups on their part. If they really wanted to push these kids, there were lots of other guys on the roster who would have happily done it. So we're not giving them a pass like, well, Okada won't do it, so I guess we can't push them.
Right.
So they don't get a freebie on failing to elevate any of those guys to the required level. That is still malpractice. The blame lies very much at the door for that. But you know, if we're talking purely about Okada, I cannot accept that the plan for the booking committee for post-G1 Okada was to fuck around with the Never Six-Man titles and avoid the young guns like the fucking plague. Yeah. Right, with these big stars, it's always a negotiation, isn't it? Like, do we think Tony Khan is ordering his top stars around and telling them exactly who they're wrestling and who they're jobbing to? Because there's plenty of evidence suggesting that is not the case. So, you know, if you're wondering why the office would indulge him in all of this, his contract was up. He had all the leverage.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what else they could have done without making it into a massive public scandal. And, you know, I'd normally be more than happy to hold their feet to the fire because, you know, like I said, Lord knows they've screwed up in plenty of other ways in recent years with no rhyme or reason. I don't think this is one of them, right? Like I said, the only option is hold your nose, put on a brave face, pretend it's all good, smile and wave until he's gone. Because Okada's got a lot of fans, and presumably you want them to keep watching the product and buy tickets after he's gone. So that's my piece, Damon. Like, and listeners, don't take my word for it. There's a fairly good chance that someone in the companies play me like an absolute fiddle, knowing that if they fed me these little scraps that I would spit this elaborate narrative and attempt to poison the fan opinion against Okada. And if that is the case, then quite frankly, I'm flattered and happy to go steam ahead with it. And, you know, quite frankly, I've done such a great job of making some of those really bizarre shit in 2023 make sense retrospectively by painting Okada as this pantomime villain. Now, I'm in too deep now. And, you know, to some extent, I'm having a bit of fun here with the nuggets we've been given. And I'm not even necessarily criticizing Okada. I mean, maybe a bit. But at the end of the day, you got to look out for yourself and your family. I respect that. However, if you do believe some of what I've just said, maybe Okada leaving isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. Look, so I'll give my take here. The conversations that Joel discussed, I was in most of them. There were some side ones that I was in with other people, and we would share back and forth with different conversations. Look, we were told, and I, more than once, that the company was, as was described, they were blindsided by this. To the tune of he was talking out both sides of his mouth. One side to the company. Yep, I'm sticking around. I'm staying. Others to maybe friends, people he works with, that my ass is gone, right? So we get both sides of this. Now, the one thing that has me leaning toward, more toward than I ever have of, yeah, the company was blindsided, is this. The idea that Okada gives notice, I don't know, maybe his mind was already made up before Wrestle Kingdom, right? Let's just say, let's just call it before Wrestle Kingdom, his mind is made up. He's not going to go to the office and say, I'm leaving, right? Why would he? Because he's still under contract until, what, mid-February? I mean, and that means he's going to do or be asked to do and somewhat forced to do what we have described and what he does not have any fucking want to do. It's just that that's the consistent narrative, is that for all of our bitching and moaning about rocket ship to the youth, let's get going here. What happened to grumpy Okada and beating up the kids? And we know. Let me take that back. We have been told numerous times that that is the case. Okay. So let's just take that and say, if he gave any type of inclination to the company that he was leaving, he's going to be asked to do that, because that would be the smart, logical thing to do. And when we would sit here and say, I can't believe they haven't done, they have. They absolutely have. It's just that their hands were somewhat tied with this one particular person, right? Who happens to be not only the most important wrestler in that promotion, but arguably all of current Japanese pro wrestling. All right. So now he gives in the official paper. His mind's already made up, but he gives the official paper to the office on that Thursday. And they scramble, right? They're like, okay, well, what the fuck do we do now? In the sense of, we got these cards, they're booked, right? We got to change them up. And it becomes, okay, you know, the Okada celebration tour, where quite obviously he's not putting over anyone. Now, I did a little history check, and I did a little homework, Joel, in preparation for this fine broadcast. Went back and looked at comparables. And in my mind, a comparable would be a person like Shinsuke Nakamura, right? A person like maybe even Kenny Omega, maybe even AJ Styles. And they're not, right? And to me, all of those people that I named are even a notch below. So I would have to go to, like, you know, Riki Choshu, maybe, in the level of importance to that era's pro wrestling. Nobody's putting anybody over. The idea and the want that and the logic that we have talked about for months, the reality is nobody does it. Nobody does it. And in fact,
well one person does it, but we'll come to him later.
Jay White did it.
That's not who I was thinking of. That's not what I'm thinking of, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was really the one that I could come up with, like, modern times New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then if you want to go back into the 90s, if you want to go back into the 80s, like, it just is a rarity. It's more rare than anything else. And then if you want to incorporate other promotions and the like, like, sure, you can come up with guys like Cena or I don't know. But I'm talking about a big time, massive, important star putting over, well, let's call it a young gun. It just doesn't happen as often as we want to believe it does. Like,
you know, can I jump in with my example and celebrate this man?
Yes.
Hiroshi Tanahashi, who arguably made Okada who he is by being selfless and going with that long-term feud of the Rainmaker Shock and all that, where, you know, were the roles to be reversed, would Okada have done the same? I don't know if he would. So
maybe again,
let's just take a moment to throw some flowers at Tanahashi, a guy who in his prime went out of his way to make this guy who just returned from excursion look like a star.
I agree with that. And I would say this too, that to me, I was going to say that they're comparable, but they weren't comparable at that time. So correct. But I think where the company was and desperately in need of that big time, we can't rely on foreign talent to be the superstar, like to be able to plug in two guys that are pure New Japan. I think Hiroshi Tanahashi saw the money in that and saw the value in that, where, you know, what Okada sees is the money and the value somewhere else. Right. But no, I think that's a fair person to put in that list. But Kenny didn't do any of this. And again, I don't think it's a fair comparable thing. AJ didn't do any of this. I feel like it's a fair comparable thing, or not really a fair comparable thing, but okay. He was world champion, so was Kenny. Shinsuke? Nope. And again, go on Cage Match. You know, set the date of, okay, this is when they started with WWE. Okay, here's where they started, whatever. And just go backwards. Go backwards. I mean, fucking the Intercontinental title was put on hold for a good month, maybe even a little bit longer, with Nakamura left as Intercontinental Champion. Remember that? Like, he could have lied down to anybody to give him that rub. He didn't do shit. He got carted off on Okada's shoulders, leaving Corkin. So, you know, it's not the territory days where, you know, the guy that was in Memphis is now going to fucking Ganya, and he's going to job on the way out. Like, it's not there. I mean, the proof's not there. So in a way, you know, Okada's smart. Not in a way, he is smart. He's protecting his own assets. He's protecting his own. He's making sure that, you know, his name is not besmirched or dinged up or anything to the New Japan fan. And he's going to go. And right now, I have to imagine that there is a legitimate bidding war going on, right? Because as we sit here today, we still don't know. And there are arguments to make for both sides of him going to one of these two promotions, AEW or WWE. And that's, when you have that situation, you just keep adding zeros to the check. It's, he played it smart. He played it smart. Now, I know in pro wrestling, nothing is forever, right? We've seen this countless times with CM Punk, Ultimate Warrior, Bruno Sammartino, Billy Graham, and again, I'm giving you all WWE because they're only, but even in Japan, Riki Choshu is an example. I wonder how this impacts his relationship with the office when his time is done making his money, right? Do you see him back in the New Japan, not necessarily in ring, but in some capacity with New Japan when this is all said and done? Like, as I sit here right now, Joel, I have doubts only because the wounds are so fresh and people do feel fucked over. Don't get me wrong. There is a feeling of that motherfucker. There is that feeling.
Have you seen the photos of recently come out of him and Tanahashi and Shibata all having a lovely dinner together?
Wonderful. I'm sure they're all talking about business, right? I'm sure of it. I mean, that's great. Look, there's no one. Sorry, I kind of breathed in and a wrong pipe. I hate throwing around the word deserves and entitled to do something. But if anybody's going to pull something like this, I mean, he does have the clout to do that. And dare I say he deserved the right to do this. He can kind of dictate what he wants. It's not what I wanted. I don't think it's for the benefit of New Japan at all. But he's like one guy that can do that, and he played those cards. I just wonder what that means after this, after he's got his money, after he comes home. What does that look like? Does that fence get mended? And people ask, well, Tanahashi, was that done because of, you know, to kind of influence Okada to stay? I'll give you a definitely maybe, but here's the thing. It's not like Tanahashi's sitting in a fucking office with a bunch of Excel spreadsheets and pie charts, you know, trying to balance the books. Eventually he'll get to that part, maybe. But to sit there and say that he's like the president, okay. And yes, he is. And every day he takes on more responsibility of that president role. But let's put it this way, it didn't work. Right? It didn't work. That didn't work. That wasn't enough. So here we are. We have the feeling that Okada may have been somewhat diva-ish, dare I say, when it comes to working with younger guys and younger talent and helping establish them as stars. Two, he did something that, quite honestly, has been done throughout the history of Japanese pro wrestling. He wouldn't be the first person to not put people over on the way out. And three, we as in New Japan, we know that they are, with losing two big stars very close to each other, and they're going to do everything in their power to try, at least you would think, to go and make new stars without them, because that's the only option they got.
Imagine if this is all like a massive work, and like we get an angle with Fujita pissing Okada off so badly that he says, "All right, that's it, I'm staying. Stay to deal with these punk kids," and launches into the hottest feud of the decade. I'll tell you what, I was talking to Fraser on the Discord Fraser, who pointed out how funny it's going to be when AEW fans think that they're free from the tyranny of CM Punk, and they, you know, they've got their lovely harmonious locker room, only to have Kazuchika Hogan rumbling in, presumably riling up the Bucks for more locker room brawls, drop kicking Tony Khan's office door off its hinges when Tony asks him to work with someone below the age of 30. So got that to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure he's going to be happier than a pig in shit. You know, wherever he lands,
he'll play nice.
Oh, no doubt. And here's the thing too. And I don't know the answer to this, but it feels like, and it seems like he's been around more American wrestlers and more American shows and more, you know, like he, of anybody, like he kind of knows the lay of the land. And the thing about it is too, is that he knows his value too, right? He knows his value. So that might even be more ominous, right? When you know your value and you know what you got and what you could get, that's a scary person to be, right? You got a little power, you got a little stroke on your way. All right, so that's what we know. That's where we go. I'll tell you what, I did joke about this in the Discord, and I was joking, so please don't fucking go bananas here. Don't give me a banana sandwich. You know, one of those fucking six-mans. All you got to do is put them in a fucking, you know, get let them put you in a scorpion deathlock, and then somebody just comes behind, wham, whack, in the fucking eye, and then wow, you might become a star yourself. Who knows? So
I'm telling you, keep an eye on Fujita. He's the one to watch here.
Let me, all right.
Or maybe Mad Mikey. Mad Mikey's going to
fuck it. Yeah.
Drop him on his head.
He's like, I got what, maybe 3 years left in this fucking business? Yeah, I'm going for it. You know what I mean? Cashing in. I'm going to be the new Bob Sapp. But, you know, stranger things in pro wrestling have occurred, right? I mean, and for what apparently might feel like less, you know, if you've got a little chip on your shoulder and you're like, oh, you don't want to fucking put me over, huh? Oh, you don't want to work with me, huh? Oh, you think I'm a... Okay. Sounds good. And then, bam. Again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen. I'm not going to say whatever, but stranger things have fucking happened. Let's put it that way. And if I'm him, I don't know. There might be times where I'm lying up in bed looking at the ceiling, thinking, what if... I did this. What if
he doesn't lie on his back, Damon? He's scared of someone coming in and sneaking a quick pin. He goes to sleep on his front.
I remember those little videos. It really is. Liger. He was a practical joker. All right. So anything else on good old KO and what we know?
Yeah. Yes. I want to read a tweet from a Japanese fan. So this is at Ming4chan. And again, I'm not saying that this fan is a representative of the entire Japanese fan base writ large. You know, it's not a monolith. I was going to read it all the same because it was quite thought-provoking. So Ming4chan says, NJPW and its fans do not wish to bind talented individuals with low wages due to a weakened yen in a country where the GDP is falling below fourth place. This sentiment is rooted in the national character, as Japanese people love success stories and aspire to heroes like Shohei Ohtani. While talent outflow is detrimental for corporations, New Japan is confident that nurturing the next talent while generating profits as a business, rather than sustaining losses by paying salaries that do not match the revenue earned from promotions, as seen with figures like Tony Khan, is the correct path. Bushiroad played a crucial role in branding someone like Okada as the Rainmaker and elevating him to stardom. The entertainment preferences of the Japanese differ. When heroes go abroad, they often become entities that fans are satisfied with merely reading about on news sites or occasionally watching free clips. Fans consistently pay to watch matches between familiar local heroes in Japan. This trend is evident in the Japanese market, where the audience for J-League and NPB continues to grow, while the viewership for European football leagues and MLB in Japan remains stagnant. Despite the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic under Bushiroad's leadership, NJPW has steadily increased its revenue. This success can be attributed to Obari's efforts in recovering lost customers due to COVID-19 and securing various sponsorship deals with different companies. Additionally, leaders like Kidani and Tanahashi are planning to increase audience members by organising spot events overseas to boost revenue while emphasising the importance of increasing travellers to Japan. They also mentioned in a Japanese magazine interview that in the near future, they plan to construct and own a dedicated arena, Inoki Arena, larger than Tokyo's Korakuen Hall. So I thought that sort of put in a nutshell the kind of sort of stoic attitude of like, this is all part of the process. You know, you build up a superstar, they become a hero, then they go and the fans are sort of content to hear about their exploits from afar, but they're going to keep turning up and enjoying the home promotion in spite of the superstar having left.
I hate it when you bring intelligent discourse to this show. let's say. Make me feel like a dope. It makes perfect sense to me. And that's the reality, it feels like.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM, and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
So,
yeah, like New Japan just didn't see the value in offering Okada. Like, maybe they couldn't, but they just obviously didn't see the value there and were, I don't know, maybe happy to let him walk away. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it all, but that's just that's an alternative perspective. Because Multiverse A says, what's the best way for New Japan and other Japanese promotions to combat the drop of the yen, making American companies even more lucrative? And I don't think they can. They cannot compete with that. So Maximize the utility while they're there. Always make sure you're training the next generation of talent. And that's it, really.
You know, this might be unrealistic, but I think that there needs to be, once again, a different system and a different method of them holding on to talent. And it's almost like rookie contracts, and it's, you know, where you get a certain deal for a certain amount of years when you first start, and then you negotiate your second deal. Unfortunately, it is the third and the fourth deal, but maybe, I don't know, maybe it's when they reach a certain age, then they can go. Or, I don't know, that does kind of defeat the purpose of the independent contractor mindset that pro wrestling has. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. That idea of being able to cover our asses when, you know, there is that, the idea of money to be made elsewhere. It's worrisome. If you're a fan of Japanese pro wrestling, if you're a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and even if you're a fan of a promotion like Noah or All Japan or whomever, right? Because you always have that in the back of your mind of, okay, if this particular person takes off and gets super red hot, you know, it's kind of like we want you to be great, but we don't want you to be too fucking noisy about it. Can you keep it down? You know, it's kind of like, you know, I hate to say it, but it is that little gatekeepery mentality of, this is my favorite band, you know, and now all of a sudden they got to let themselves a little bit of a minor hit, and all these people that you really can't fucking stand are now listening to your favorite band that you fucking wallowed in the mud with. There is that feeling. And I think Okada himself outgrew that, right? Don't get me wrong. Like, he was beyond that there is that thought of, hell, there's that thought of people who are just diehard, you know, grimy indie Japanese pro wrestling that don't want a fucking thing to, you know, they'll sit there and watch hours of Big Japan and completely hand wave anything going on in New Japan. Why? Because Big Japan is theirs. You know what I mean? It's they found their hole. They found their, you know, they fit right in. That's what they like. That's what they enjoy. And some of that might be because it is a little bit different and it is a little bit off the beaten path. But if for some reason Big Japan Pro Wrestling got you know, just massively red hot. And it turned into this promotion where everybody felt like they needed to watch. And then all of a sudden, two fucking white guys decided to do a podcast on that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're sitting there as a fan of Big Japan, I don't know, you'd be like, what the fuck? What's happening? This is my thing. Joe, I don't know the answer, but yeah, it's concerning, right? It's concerning.
A few questions about what happens to Chaos. So William says, what does Okada leaving to do to Chaos? The Chaos leadership, other than a lot of people going, oh, Okada was in Chaos, and Yoshihashi explaining what Chaos is to Okada. Bash says, random thought, Okada dips, so there's no more Chaos, right? Doesn't seem anyone taking it over. It's been dead for a while. Just the nail in the coffin. Wrestling Dad says, hear me out. With Okada out now, could it be finally time to not disband Chaos, but to make it stronger as the new cool heel faction emerges, led by none other than motherfucking Tomohiro Ishii? This heel run of his life leads him to a cup of coffee with a big boy belt. I would pass on that last one. I think doing that would reek of desperation. I think the idea, the plan should be the young guys, not the guys who are pushing 50. So I think Chaos should disband. I mean, if we're looking for someone to take that mantle, maybe Oiwa. I mean, he's been kept out of all this. I still think, you know, my conspiracy theory is that that spot was primed for Yuya, and it, you know, didn't work out for the reasons that I've explained. But yeah, I'd say Ty's probably right to get rid of it.
I'm okay with that if that doesn't, that means we don't now split her into three more factions, right? Out of the one. Like, that's the last thing.
Chaos, black and gold.
Right. Right. I don't want to have three more to rise from the ashes from one. Look, truth be told, did anybody really think Chaos was a thing anymore? Aside from Rocky Romero. Right? I don't know. I mean, it didn't feel really, hasn't felt like a thing in a long time. That being said, is it dead with Okada gone? I mean, here's the thing. It is an opportunity, and it is a nice built-in way to get, you know, get some juice behind some people, and get some energy behind them. It could be a nice little resurrection spot for somebody. I say keep it because my fear is by breaking it up, you're just making more. Nobody wants more of anything. But let's use it as a vehicle and a tool to help someone rise up. And I think there's plenty of names that can fall into that.
Okay, Jay says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much is the Elite / AEW to blame for this current downfall?
We'll find out soon.
You cannot deny that AEW has just gobbled up New Japan's Western market share. And that pipeline of all the top indie talent that WWE hadn't signed yet, you know, that's affected them, sure. And now it's accelerating that process we've talked about before about Western person starting to catch fire, get themselves over, brush with stardom, and then not the promotion stardom, but the concept stardom. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I'd use the phrase to blame, but it is a major factor in things being the way they are.
But I mean, you really didn't have to worry about Vince, right? Vince had no idea what New Japan was, let alone he had no idea what Japan was, let alone New Japan. I was never really worried about Vince. When Vince left, or was asked to leave, or whatever you want to believe, yeah, of course, you know, you hear about Uncle Paul and how, you know, he's a little bit more open and a little bit more willing to explore the different paths of pro wrestling to find new talent and new stars. We all know Tony Khan's a huge fucking fan of pro wrestling in all of its forms, from Watts's Mid-South UWF, you know, he's a massive fan of that. Memphis as well. ECW Arena, he was there. You know, and of course, you know his love of Japanese pro wrestling. He's a billionaire. He owned, you know, his family owns, and he works for, and he's in a very important department in that organization. You know, there's only a handful of people that own NFL teams. And if you own an NFL team, let me be very clear. You think this wrestling money that they're throwing around with TV rights is something? You ain't seen nothing. You ain't seen nothing when it comes to TV rights for the NFL. It's silly, silly money. You're a pro wrestling fan, and dad says, okay, go do what you want. You got your Premier League team. You know, you got this. You like the wrestling? Go for it, kid. Here you go. I would do the same fucking thing. I hate to say it. He would be following I wouldn't be signing half the people that he would sign because I'm not a fan of theirs. But the wrestlers that I was, are you kidding me? I'd be fucking knocking on their front door with a bouquet in one hand and a fucking eight ball in another. Whatever it took. I don't care. I'm signing them. I'll write the check. Daddy's money. Let's go. So I can't. As much as I want to blame him, I can't blame him. I'd do the same fucking thing if I were in his shoes. And let me tell you, there are a lot of people that are listening to this. Your fantasy book. You got your little things. You got your Fire Pro Wrestling, and you got your all of it. What your what was that TEW and you name it. You do the same fucking thing. If given the opportunity, you do the same fucking thing. And that's not a fault, because I would do it too. I'd be, oh my God, I got a boner just thinking of it. You know what I mean? To be able to do that? Okay. I'll also say this, if I may. And I've said this before, and I forget where I heard it. And if you told me it, I apologize. The hardest thing, the easy thing, is booking and coming up with the ideas and the creativity. And all right, this show, this will happen, and then this guy, and then this will happen, and blah blah blah. And then 6 months later, we're here, and this TV show, we'll book this guy against this guy. That's the easy part. The hard part is getting people to agree to do that. The wrestlers, right? That's the hard part. We're living it right now. New Japan, I want to give them more credit than maybe I did in the past of having a game plan and an idea and what's right thing to do for New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm going to give them more credit than I have been. But that with that said, that don't mean shit unless the fucking wrestlers go along with it. And once again, I will say, and Joel, you are 1,000% right. This doesn't all have to fall on Okada's shoulders. The problem is that there was the possibility of him going, and until he puts his name on the dotted line, you ain't got shit. All you got is his word. And as much as we want to talk about honor and the lion mark and the history and all of that, I don't mean shit. And I will say this. It means more to us than it does to a ton of wrestlers, right? And I'm not saying that's necessarily Okada, but not for nothing. Here we are.
Right, especially when the value of your paycheck is going down the toilet because of the yen collapsing. So, again, you know, I was having a bit of fun at the start of the podcast with the information we've given, but I don't blame Okada. I'd have probably done the same thing. So, you know, especially when you got kids, you got to put your family first. So there we go. Life goes on. Daryl says, to me, this is an all hands on deck time for the company. They need new talent and need to get them over. Having said that, and with New Japan of America basically being a dead promotion, what do you think of bringing their talent over regularly for tours? Lawler, Rosa, Tito, of course, maybe even Kratos. These guys have been loyal soldiers for years. And they surely deserve a tap on the shoulder in these trying times. And surely there must be some grads with a Farley Tojo ready for the call. Oh, don't be ridiculous. I would love that idea, but I don't think New Japan seem to have a huge amount of money to be splashing around right now. So I wouldn't hold your breath for that, even though I do think it's a good idea.
I do too, but and once again, I would agree with you. Like if they thought they had a diamond in the rough, or a potential superstar, don't you think they would have bit already? Like they just don't see it. Or at the very least, they don't see it enough to even bring the fucking guys over. You know, World Tag League, okay. I mean,
they can barely see it enough with the guys that they do have over there,
right,
working for them week in, week out, enough to give them offers that they're satisfied with.
Right, and I hate to be Mr. fucking, you know, doom and gloom on that, but I mean, I'm just going by what we've seen. Like, if they thought they had something in any of the names that you mentioned and any others that, you know, would fall into that same category, I think they would have bitten. I think we wouldn't be having a conversation like this. But, I mean, they apparently don't. At least not yet. But I don't know what they would need to be convinced of it and be sold on that idea if they haven't already.
Morning Progress says, what's the best way to balance the looming panic calls of needing to accelerate the main event building of their young talent with a need to give Naito a proper run in his final time with the title to not anger the hardest of hardcore fans they currently have? Mr. Flanagan says, outside of Shota Umino, who is most likely to win the G1 at main event Wrestle Kingdom 19? Azurario says, gun to your head, pick the next possible two guys to win the G1 and main event Wrestle Kingdom 19 that would lead us into this new era of NJPW. So I've lumped all those in together because I just wanted your thoughts on how you personally would book the world title scene over the next 12 months. So we've got Naito with the title at the moment.
Okay.
Honestly, as a Naito fan, for me, the fun is in the chase and seeing him get that moment. I would like him to have a substantial run with it, but I'm not going to be putting my foot through the TV if he were to lose it soon. And you know, I don't know how long it's going to be. And I think a lot of Naito fans would probably feel the same about that. But how would you map it out? How long's Naito holding that title for? Who's your G1 winner? What's your Wrestle Kingdom program?
I think right now, as much as we want rocket ships on guys, I think there is a definite need for stabilization. And Naito does provide that. And as much as we want to talk about how banged up he is and how this is probably his last run and all of that, he still is probably in more of a way than even Hiroshi Tanahashi, because Naito can still go when tapped on the shoulder. And by the way, that's trademarked. Anybody wants to do the tap on the shoulder thing, that's mine, all right? Thank you very much. I heard that on a broadcast, maybe. It's stability. And I think he holds on to it at least going into G1. And you know what? I would have zero problem, Joel, if you told me right now, he's your champion until Wrestle Kingdom. I would have zero problem with that. Now, in that time frame, are we also giving guys big wins? Maybe New Japan Cups? Look, every year we sit here with New Japan Cups and G1s, and we're like, well, this is the year for this guy, and this is the year for this guy. And, you know, I don't want to be the wet blanket, but it's never that year. You know what I mean? Like, it's never that. So I think while you can, this is a different time. And dare I say, I would love the new way of thinking a little bit, maybe rushing things a little bit, maybe stepping on the gas a little bit harder for a lot of these guys. Naito as champion for the year is stability. And let's build up those other studs that we have. Should we utilize Zack Sabre Jr. more? Absolutely. Like, he should be a huge factor in New Japan this year. Because why? He's a stabilizing force. He's a guy that has that reputation of being a guy. And there is a level that a ceiling, so to speak, that it would not be a bad idea to have him cross that threshold. another guy, Tai Chi. Why not? Let's fucking see what else we can do. Maybe with that, you know, maybe, I don't know, challenging Finley. Who knows? Finley's another guy that needs to step up, like, in a big fucking way. And then we work on the young guys and getting them really picking up solid, major, like, life-changing wins during this year to make them legitimate, so that when the year ends and we're talking about a dome, we have main events, semi-main events, and all of that, where guys are being plugged in to those roles, and away we go, right? I think that's the course.
Yeah, for me, if I'm thinking top three guys, I'd be looking at Wrestle Kingdom main event next year to be two from Naito, Shota, and Tsuji. Because to me, Shota is pretty much there. Tsuji, a little bit further behind, but we'll get there. And to me, those two are far and away beyond the other people in their class for the time being. And I don't think anyone else on the roster has that star power, that star aura that I'm attributing to Naito and projecting upon Shota and Tsuji. So
you're completely you're completely out on Ren.
I don't think he's ever going to be the top guy. No.
Or a guy. Maybe not the top guy, but a guy. Because I know he's struggling. Look, I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say, yeah, he's, nobody's doing that.
Yeah, it's appropriate he's in House of Torture. I think he's on a similar trajectory to Evil.
Okay. Can I throw a name out at you that I was thinking about the other day? What about a guy like Sho? I mean, he's going to need a new coat of paint, right? He's got to get the fucking House of Torture, stink off of him. But let's just say that...
I don't think that's going to happen.
No? Okay. Like his little touch of... his little cup of coffee up there in that New Japan Cup didn't get you a boner?
Mini sugar routine. It was fun.
Yeah.
I liked it. I just don't think that they're going to pivot away from House of Torture as much as some people would like them to.
Okay. That's fair. So, Yota Tsuji, Ren, no. Yuya? Yeah?
He could get there. I just think there was a sort of haunted look in his eyes for the first few weeks of his re-debut that made me think, what's happened here? Okay. And I think there's a story behind that. I don't know what it is. I've speculated on it. I think he could get there, but he's not at the level of Shota and Tsuji.
Can he get there by the end of the year?
Not in his current position as the third tier heavyweight in Just Five Guys.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's fair. And Ren, we got that's a long term project, right?
Yeah, and I've mentioned before, I really high on Fujita, but I think he's probably going to be positioned at first, at least as a junior. And Oiwa, really interesting one, that he's been given this sort of non-traditional excursion working over at Noah. So I think he will be a really interesting guy to keep an eye on when he comes back.
Okay, but they're well behind the crop that we have right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Shota's pretty much there for me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Here's a name I'm going to throw out. And we've been snake bitten by this name before. But it is a name that the company seems to trust. And while he might not be a favorite of ours, to say he's not an important cog in the New Japan wheel, I think it would be kind of just overlooking the obvious. What about Sonata? All right.
I
talk to me.
If it were up to me, I'd be done with him as a world title, realistic world title option.
Okay.
The odd challenger, sure, but in terms of him winning the big belt and main eventing your top level shows, not for me. To me, he dropped the ball massively when they gave it to him last year. And I think there's better options out there.
I do too. But again, if we're looking for stability, if we're looking for just kind of a, you know, kind of keep...
I don't think we are, though. I don't want stability. I want excitement and risk-taking and something fresh and exciting. Like, we could do stability with, you know, Sonata and Shingo and this guy and that guy who we've, you know, gone around the block with plenty of times. But let's be bold here. Let's take some risks.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Trust me, I am. But
no G1 win. I'm calling it.
Okay. Okay, one of those guys is a G1 winner. Okay, that's fine. All I'm saying is this. Do we need, right now, in 2024, do we need to have the heavyweight title be the focal point of these youngsters getting that rocket? Is there a secondary title that would do the trick? Is it the new global title, wherever the fuck that is? The... never title. Is there something else that can do all that? Like, can there be just fucking madness underneath the world title picture? Or are you just saying, let's just go balls deep and fucking go?
No, I'd be up for that. Some sort of stratification of these youngsters where maybe if Shota is the guy where the trajectory is world title picture, that maybe for the time being, Tsuji is plugged in just the level below. You know, maybe we have some like extended Finlay versus Tsuji programs for that global title.
Right.
And then maybe the next guy is tussling for the never title, whoever that may be. Right. So,
All right. Then let me ask you this. How confident are you? And again, we're sitting here fucking fantasy booking like we do all the time. How confident are you that this company is going to do anything that we suggested here?
Where's the evidence, right? That's not what I said with the whole Okada thing. Putting Okada to one side, they were very, very slow, very conservative to pull their finger out and do something.
Yep.
Because this is, you know, the classic New Japan, slow, long-term booking. I think we are close to getting to that point with Shota because he's lost enough. And the same with Tsuji, to be honest. He's eaten a lot of shit in terms of sort of kayfabe losses. Yep. So I think we must surely be reaching the point where they're like, okay, they've done their sort of, oh, look, this young kid has got all the enthusiasm and energy, but not quite put it all together. Like, I think we're reaching the end of that journey. I hope.
I hope so too. But again, like I said, and you brought up the point, this doesn't all fall on Okada's shoulders, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
You know what I mean?
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not giving the company a pass for that.
Right. We have plenty of time to do other things with other people that might be a little bit more interested in doing something like this. But would it have been beautiful with Okada going out the door to have that work and that communication between the company and the wrestler to make that work? Abso-fucking-lutely. Again, history might not have been on our side with that. Fair enough. And, you know, I just don't know if it would have the same impact. It probably wouldn't, but it would have impact with whomever, right? That could have been Goto, right? That could have been, I don't know, fucking, there's a million names, right? And why beat a dead horse? But I don't have confidence.
Osprey would have done it. Will Osprey just put over Josh Alexander in Impact.
He's right.
Almost certainly going to be putting over fucking Michael Oku in RevPro. So do you mean to tell me that they couldn't have had Shota or Tsuji, one of them, beat Will Ospreay in one of those matches towards the tail of the 2023? No. And I think that's on the company. I think they didn't want to do that because they wanted to have Ospreay going into this Finlay thing with Moxley at Wrestle Kingdom. Like, I don't know at what point that became a three-way, but Will Ospreay is a guy who I think would have had absolutely zero problem putting over anyone on their roster. I think he would have done it, and he would have made them look $1 million.
Yeah, I would love to think that, at least, right? I would love to have that in my head because the perception is there. But you know, who knows? Maybe he was a problem too. Again, there's been no indicator, and nobody has said a word. It's funny because, you know, look, Okada is Okada, mind you, but nobody said a peep about Will Ospreay, right? And issues or problems or challenges or, I mean, look, we've had people talk to us and say that he's, you know, kind of. He's Will Ospreay. Let's put it that way. Right? He's just, you know, okay. You know, it's, you know, but you, that's one thing we haven't heard is that he would be like, I'm off, bruv. I ain't putting him over. Yeah, that ain't happening. We haven't heard that.
Right, we've done 1 hour 15 minutes, and I don't really have the energy.
Neither do I. I gotta. You know what? I'm glad you said that. I gotta get something to eat. I gotta talk to my wife. I gotta find a job.
Right.
I got all this.
Can I rush through? Can I rush through Nagoya?
Right, sure. I will please.
Speed run it.
By all means.
I had notes for the undercard.
Oh, come on, yeah. Joel! Please.
Right, I'm gonna go through it. There's not that much there. So right. We had Shoma Kato, Katsuya, Morishima, timely withdrawal. First match they've had together. Seems to me that Morishima is being positioned above Shoma Kato, even though it did go to a draw. He was very, very close to getting the win, but it's probably going to be a back-and-forth thing. But they're both quite little. I expect them to be juniors, but it's always fun watching those guys. Coming up, we had Honma and Shota against Yujiro and Ren. So Shota has new white tasseled trousers. Not sure about those. I did prefer the pink tights. But yeah, Ren needing a Yujiro Kane interference spot to beat Honma is the sort of thing that makes me think, yeah, maybe
you're in trouble.
Maybe this guy's, yeah. And I know they're just sort of trying to like literally bash us over the head with that. Yeah, he's a heel. But it'd be nice to have a heel that doesn't cheat. I know we had that sort of with the genesis of United Empire. There are no longer heels, but something to think about. I really enjoyed the 10-man tag with United Empire and Bullet Club. Yeah. I have questions about Francesco Akira's future. Not like whether he's going to stay with New Japan, because I think he is, but is he going to stick around at United Empire? I think there's sort of maybe little rumblings that TJP Ooh. Might tell on him. I saw someone doing Aswang lore that the Aswang will bite whoever's in the vicinity or something. So maybe that's going to be something where Akira is like the scapegoat, not the Jack Perry scapegoat, but something happens at the end of that cage match where he is kicked out of the faction or something. There was a great line from Walker Street. The most loyal of the Filipino cryptids. Like he's got a ranking chart for the loyalty of the various Filipino cryptids.
He does a lot of homework, Joel. He's a very studious young man who wants to get every angle covered. So maybe he does have that.
There was another great line he came up later in the show. I'll save that one. I do have contract concerns about Gabe Kidd, and to a larger extent, Henare. My feeling is Gabe's going to stick around. I think with those Bullet Club War Dogs and all the contract stuff, it's been, if you'll forgive the pun, a lot of bark and no bite. So I expect them to stay, although, yeah, if Gabe leaves, I will be upset. I don't think he will, though. Henare, though, I would be upset if he goes, because I think there's a lot of upside there and a lot of exciting things that he's enough to see slotted into that. Never open weight scene, but
well, the good news is that he hates the United States. So,
so well, I don't know, man, because from what I understand, WWE are quite aggressively recruiting.
A lot of
Polynesian people to that maybe can plug into the this What is it called? Lifeblood? No, not Lifeblood. What's the fucking angle called? The one with Roman Reigns.
It's called the Game of Life.
But yeah, I'm really excited about the cage match in Osaka. That's going to be great.
Yes.
There was a good finish here with David Finlay powerbombing Callum Newman and sitting on his head, which is really good. There's not really that much else that was interesting, to be honest. I'm going to skip ahead to the KOPW provisional match, the Ishimori ring fit match, which I thought was very funny. I thought it was just a rib on Okan to get him all gassed up because he's, you know, doesn't look conventionally in shape. But the finish of it was quite funny. Although I wasn't aware that belt acquisition was the criteria for winning. So when he put his hand on the belt and they're like, oh, Okan's won. I was like, what, really? That was quite funny though. I enjoyed that. And I'm glad Okan has got KOPW because I think he might be able to do some fun stuff with it.
I do. I mean, I guess I do too. I mean, it's something for the poor guy. I didn't understand the fucking rules. You had the same reaction I did. I was like, wait, what? Did I miss something? I mean, and trust me, it felt like it was changing every 10 minutes of what exactly I was watching. But yeah, but that was weird. I mean, here's the thing. I'm sure we'll have more wackiness. I'm very curious to learn if it actually is, like, do the participants actually have a say in, like, are they going to someone and saying, hey, I got this wacky idea. We can do this for this match. It's, I don't know. We'll pull down her pants and fuck, you know, I don't know, you know, and shove pineapples up her ass.
You can have that one. If anyone who's listening,
right? That's free.
Oh, great, O'Conn, pineapple up the ass stipulation match. Right. We'll do a gangbusters.
Right. Like what? I mean, I wonder if they actually do. I've never thought to ask, but maybe if somebody who's listening can give us that information, that'd be wonderful. We'll put out a breaking podcast.
Yeah, and then we had the strong openweight tag team championship match with ELP and Hikaleo defeating Chase Owens and Kenta in 21 minutes. That felt like about 50.
I want you to describe our conversation that we had off the air about this match. Good. Say exactly what we were talking about.
We both watched it, but weren't sure whether or not we'd watched it,
yeah,
and forgot who won the match and have absolutely nothing to say about the match.
Exactly right. It was on my TV. I remember looking at it, and I have no recollection of it whatsoever.
Like the Men in Black thing where they flash the white light and you immediately forget everything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what this match was. There wasn't anything offensive about it. It was just boring, and boring is therefore bad. And look, if you don't like the Chase Owens and Kenta tag team, then unfortunately, you're probably going to be seeing a lot more of them this year. So, very real threat that they are going to win those IWGP heavyweight tag titles. So,
well, look, it's about time Chase Sticky. Earned that money. About time Chase earned that money. Whoops. I got it. I'm sorry.
Christ. Main event, never open weight championship match. So, went to a 2 minute 34 second no contest, and then they started up again as a lumberjack death match, which went 18 minutes and Evil won via Evil to become the new never open weight champion. I think we all know what this was going to be going into it. Your mileage will vary depending on what your tolerance level is for House of Torture. I quite like them, so I thought this was quite fun. I expected it to be full of shenanigans and bullshit and interference, and it was. And they got me with a few of the near falls, and you know, me and all the other Discord freaks were hooting and a hollering. Like, I thought there was a possibility that Tamatonga would win and then vacate the belt. You know, everything that we've talked about guys refusing to do business on the way out. Tamatonga, unfortunately, is not one of them. So there was that near fall where he got his finishing move and then Dick Togo pulled the ref out of the ring. I was just like, oh, that got me. So I had a lot of fun here. I thought it was a decent match for what it was. And strangely emotional for me seeing Tamatonga saying goodbye, because he's not my favourite, and I've said multiple times, and I stand by that, I think he really hit his ceiling in New Japan, but very well-loved by the home fans,
yeah,
and held down the fort very, very bravely and nobly during COVID when a lot of guys were just refusing to go over there,
yep,
sacrificed a lot for the company, yep, whilst he had a very young family to be looking after and, you know, seeing his daughter's first steps over FaceTime or whatever it was. You know, I feel that and I respect that. So for all the shit we've talked about Tamatonga, I think he did a lot of good for the company that will probably get forgotten and hand-waved. But I think it's important to take a moment to, you know, celebrate him and acknowledge his history, you know, being one of the Bullet Club OGs. And, you know, maybe even if he had his big hot babyface singles run not during COVID, then who knows how it might have been different. It's just unfortunate that happened right in the middle of the clap crowd stuff. So
now I will say this:
the right time to move on.
Yep, I agree. 1,000%. Sorry to step on you there.
No, go ahead.
I do agree with everything that you said. And I'm going to say this too: for a lot of guys, like, he's the poster child of what am I going to be doing in New Japan? Like, here's a guy that was in that promotion for the longest time, again, tag champs, long time, you know, singles title here, singles title there, but never really became what I think everybody wanted to see, right? And I think that he represents a lot of people's concerns of, okay, I've spent a lot of time in New Japan. Where am I going here? Where am I going? What does the company see in me? And me moving forward. Give me a letter grade in his entire time in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'll give you mine. B minus.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Good. We're on the same page. There we go.
The quote I really enjoy from Walker was evil smoking that Tamatonga pack, which just made me burst out laughing. That was extremely funny. Derek says Tamatonga is taking Tongaloa with him, right? I don't know. I've not heard anything about Tongaloa, actually. I've not thought to ask. It's been out of sight, out of mind with me. Rabo Slampink says, what are your thoughts on the Nagoya show as a statement following the announcement of Okada's departure? It may not have been the best foot forward. I thought everyone was working really hard and, you know, they had the right energy about them. It was not a card built to get you like, we're so back. Again, I enjoyed the main event, semi-main. Bleh. So I do echo your sentiments, Rambo and Slamping, but at the end of the day, I wasn't expecting them to completely reshuffle the card at short notice just because Okada's leaving. So yeah. I thought they did. It was a relatively inoffensive watch, but there's better stuff around the corner.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the quote that I can use when it came to like the feeling, like the general temperature of what people are feeling in New Japan right now. I'm just kind of reading. Okay. There is anxiety there. And another quote we were at, it's a lot of, well, what now? And let's see here. What else I can give you here? I guess that's good for right now. I don't think the mood was, we have to go out here and put on the greatest pro wrestling extravaganza we can. I think there was a little bit of, let's get to the other side. I think there was a lot of that.
Right, we've got a couple of Korakuen Hall shows coming up. Probably one of them would have happened by the time you listen to this. So we've got Tuesday, January 23rd at Korakuen Hall. The top two matches, we have a singles match between Master Wato and Sho, and then we have a main event is the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match between El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. So I'm fully expecting Despy to retain here, although I am sort of looking at that Wato and Sho semi-main event and thinking, what's going on here? So possibly Sho winning that and then challenging Despy afterwards, after Despy has dispatched of Kanemaru. But, with all the history that Despy and Kanemaru have got, being decorated junior tag champs for a very long time, it's always a match I look forward to, and they're going to get plenty of time. And with a Korakuen crowd behind them, I'm sure that's going to be a really fun one to watch.
Yeah. I mean, look, we said 15 minutes ago we were wrapping it up, bro. So I'm going to leave.
And then Wednesday main event is a singles match between Shota Umino and Red Narita. They're probably going to be full of shenanigans. I expect Shota to get his win back there and, you know, maybe build up some of that all-important momentum going into New Japan Cup. He could be a dark horse, or maybe even one of the favourites for that. But the interesting one here is the semi-main event, the NEVER Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship match with Ishii, Tanahashi and Okada defending against Fujita, Shane Haste and Mikey Nichols. Yep. So here I am hoping and expecting Fujita to get his big win here. And a nice little treat for Shane and Mikey for all the hard work that they've done to not a great deal of fanfare. So I'm expecting TMDK to win. And I think Fujita may well pick up the fall here. And it could well be over El Presidente Tanahashi showing Okada the right way to do business.
Okay.
How do you see this one going?
See, here's the problem. And correct me if I'm wrong. This is Okada's last cork and haul with New Japan, correct?
That is a great question. Let me check, because there's another two coming up the following week. So that is Sunday, February 4th and Monday, February the 5th. And if I'm going through the cards on that, I am not seeing Mr. Okada on that one.
Okay.
And on this one, I am not seeing him either.
Okay. That's a problem.
So you could be right.
That's a problem.
Oh, yes. I'm sweating now. Fujita's like, fuck.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, I can't see a title change. Okay, so if there's a title change and he gets the win, whatever happens after the bell rings is going to take a bit of steam out of that win, I would think, right? Because the focus will then be, goodbye, we love you, kiss the mat, cry, get carried on somebody's shoulders.
Motherfucker. Are we in agreement that if the Chaos team win, that's Okada's politicked his way out of doing the job there?
I mean, come on. Right? So, and unless they change some cards and do some, you know, something to fucking fix that issue, I mean, could he lose still? Yes. Could there be a title change? Yes. But I kind of don't want that. Like, I don't want a guy like that to get a big win, and especially pin Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like, that's not many people get the chance to do that. Chase Owens aside, right? Not many people get to fucking do that. I don't know. I don't know how we feel about that. Because, once again, this is going to be... If this is his last Corrigan, how could you? How could you do that? I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's a very exciting one.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll have lots to say.
Emergency show.
This week, yeah.
There's my last
shoots on Okada, goes full Hiro Matsuda and breaks Okada's leg.
That's what I'm saying. You know what? Fucking one good kick to the orbital bone. You're a megastar.
Do it.
Shoot, don't want a motherfucker. All right, we're not promoting violence here, please. All right,
I am.
How we feeling? We're good. We're feeling all right.
I've got a question that he demanded to be put at the front of the show, but we'll save that for next time.
Okay. Oh, Antonio? Aw, poor guy.
You want to squeeze it in?
Let's do it. It's at the end. I hope he's okay with the format change.
He is going to be furious.
Probably, but let's be angry as
Kazuchika Okada when asked to work with Young Ten. So, all right, I'll ask it. Antonio says, Bushiroad did a very good job in reviving New Japan after Yuke's planted the seeds for it to happen, but my question is, has Bushiroad's time as New Japan owner run its course? I know they did well with New Japan, especially Okada leaving. I feel their time has run its course as owners. So do you think we are likely to see a change of ownership of New Japan in the not-too-distant future?
I just want to hit stop right now on that answer.
Yeah, hit stop. Let's do it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. RedSilver.com/Jake.
Oh, that's terrible. Look, Bushiroad's not selling. Why would they? They're not going to sell. And not for nothing, who's going to buy? Right? So, I will say this, Joel, we do not want Bushiroad selling to anyone at this point, right? We need, like, when we talk about stability, we need stability here, right? Nobody's buying, nobody's selling. We'll leave it at that. Thank you, Antonio, for your patience.
All right. Thanks, everyone else. I'm going now. Bye.
Hey. Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.